This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, British American Tobacco smoked again today. Vodacom and MTN losing signal rapidly. Omnia explodes, call it what you like. Tiger Brands suffers some food poisoning. Coronation dethroned. Some blue chip carnage out there on the Aussie today. And our eyewitness at the scene of the pileup of misery on the Aussie is Paolo De Almeida, portfolio manager at Sasfin. Paolo, as you said to me earlier, just another day in the office. How are you doing?
Just another day in the office. It just keeps getting more and more interesting.
Well, it's not looking pretty, but equally some big names sped away, particularly in resources. And I'm looking across at my screen, which was rectified just in time to see that Implats led the gainers today, along with BHP Billiton on the resource side. But I think the mood and the move was all to the south, not South 32, deep into the red. We ended the day at 52,259 points. That's down around about 2%, yeah. Really taking our cue from what happened in U.S. markets on Friday.
Yeah, so the all share now roughly about 13, 14% down for the year, which shows you it's been a tough year. You mentioned the resources. That was really the only place you could hire today. The big diversified miners, Billiton, Glencore, South 32, all of those actually had a decent day, up 1, 2%. But if you looked at industrial board, as you mentioned in the intro, absolute carnage. The big shares that you know, the trillion rand companies, British American Tobacco, down 10%, Naspers, Richemont, all those shares struggled today. But it was a nasty sell-off. And in every sector you looked, you saw big losses, whether it was retailers, food producers, banks, property companies, big losses there. And then what is quite interesting is any of the companies that put out results, a trading statement or results, share got absolutely massacred.
Yeah, as we saw from the likes of Brait, the likes of Vodacom, which we'll get to, the likes of Tongaat Hewlett, and I think the market's still digesting what's going on there. But let's zoom out a little bit. Singles Day yesterday. Now, what is Singles Day and why is it called Singles Day?
So Singles Day is actually quite interesting. 11th of November, I always remember it because it is Mr. David Shapiro's birthday at the office. So whenever I hear Singles Day, it's a firm reminder it's David's birthday.
Well, happy belated birthday, Shappy.
But what's interesting is it's similar to Black Friday. It used to be dedicated to the single people in China, but it's just become Alibaba's big day in which they throw huge amounts of specials and people go absolutely berserk for it. What's interesting is that you could compare it similar to Black Friday, but it is enormous, three times the size of Black Friday. So to give you an indication, yesterday they did $30 billion, which blew the previous record of $25 billion out the water. What's interesting is that in the first minute, they did $1 billion. So although you hear the concerns of trade tariffs and concerns over the Chinese economy, people love a good bargain. And when there is a bargain, people will be there with their wallets to support it. What's interesting, though, is Alibaba is actually down close to 18, 19% for the year on concerns around Chinese economy, Chinese concerns, trade tariffs, but people love a bargain.
Yeah, and are those concerns perhaps slightly overblown? I suppose those numbers are huge. I mean, for us to digest the fact that it's turning over $30 billion in a day,
that's madness.
Is absolute madness. It's up 27% on last year. And I suppose the market concern is that that's the lowest annual increase in the history of Singles Day. But growing at that rate, what did the market expect?
Absolutely. We were all surprised. You know, a lot of people, given the way you've seen some of the tech names in the likes of Alibaba, you're actually expecting a relatively soft day on Singles Day yesterday, and it blew most expectations out the water. And they saw everything there, electronics to milk formula, absolutely everything. But it also talks to a point in that I think people will also hold back on spending until they see value and they're willing to let money go at a good deal. So you could see pent-up demand in sales, and that's what you're seeing come through in a day like yesterday.
It's also probably why Apple is getting slammed. I think it's brought a lot of sales forward with its release strategy around the various iPhone iterations. And what you do is then potentially cannibalize future sales. That pent-up demand, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of that in the South African economy. We've got Black Friday coming out at the at the end of the month, and retail sales numbers out this week will give us an indication and a clue as to the state of the South African economy. Lest we forget, yesterday was Armistice Day, so lest we forget, 60% of GDP is still consumer driven in South Africa.
This number is important, a lot more important than people think. So first quarter number was a disaster from a GDP point. Second quarter is a disaster. South Africa's in recession. This will be the last piece of the puzzle we have to determine and kind of get an idea where the third quarter went. If you look at retail sales for September, they should hold up on a year-on-year basis, roughly 2%. You have the positive being that interest rates have been on hold, so you don't have that pressure. But on the negative side, yeah, fuel prices have gone up, VAT's gone up. Mm. The word recession leads to people just keeping money in their pocket. There's a lot of worries, uncertainty. But the point to make is if you see a major negative surprise, let's say you on your sales are down 3-4%, the third quarter GDP number would be at a little bit of risk.
Now, consumer confidence is a funny thing. And it's an important thing here, because a lot of people point to the fact that consumers aren't spending as a sign of consumer indebtedness and households just being overborrowed and up to their eyeballs in debt. But I'm more of the opinion that this is a confidence issue. And if you look at there's a very interesting tweet by Mike Schussler earlier today that consumer debt to GDP here in South Africa is now lower than the average for emerging markets and way below the global average as well. So the South African household from a balance sheet perspective is actually looking better than we have since the global financial crisis.
That is quite interesting. Your points with regards to confidence, I do believe it is a confidence issue. I think confidence is one of the most important things you can have in an economy. Nothing will change without that changing confidence. And I just don't think we have it yet. You see the negative headlines every single day. You drive home, you hear fuel prices going up, markets under pressure, GDP's under pressure. The last thing you want to go do is big ticket purchases. So let's hope that Mark Schussler's right, and let's hope that we do start spending. But I'm doubtful.
We have always got the IFC to fall back on, I guess, sometimes when we want to see the glass half full. And the IFC they did come out today saying that the policy certainty signals, we're not yet seeing it translate into real changes in policy, but the signals are all heading in the right direction out of the presidency in particular.
I would say that's 100% fair. If you look at what Cyril Ramaphosa is doing with his investment summit, his job summit, in terms of some of the SOEs, the boards that he's replaced, in terms of some of the firing that has to take place, that still needs to take place, you know, that is the kind of stuff that you need to get right slowly. And then a year, 12 months, 18 months, you'll start to see hopefully the benefits of that start to flow through. But you need to stem the bleeding now.
Well, I've got a bit of trivia to keep you firmly in your seat, Paolo. Why is Singles Day always on the 11th of November? Don't answer it yet. We're going to cross to Pusaletso for the latest out there in the traffic.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
And this is one for my producer sitting in the booth opposite me. Why is Singles Day always on the 11th of November? The 11th of the 11th. Paolo, well, it's fairly straightforward. I suppose the Chinese like a bit of numerology. 11-11 represents four ones, four singles standing together. So the name actually literally translates as single sticks holidays. There's a bit of useless information for you. Now, the skittishness that we saw over in Asia wasn't delayed by those eye-wateringly large numbers out of Singles Day. And it didn't allay fears around Tencent. And there's a bit of Tencent fatigue, Paolo. I know we talk about it all the time. But it's just too important not to talk about it. It was down 3%. Naspers down 4% today. What are we expecting from those numbers on Wednesday?
You say the Tencent fatigue, and that's absolutely right. But you have to talk about the stock. Naspers is 20% of the index, and that is driven by kids playing computer games in China. So I think you have to give Tencent all the credit and all the time that it deserves. Quite interesting is that they'll put out numbers on Wednesday, and this will be one of the closest quarterly numbers releases of Tencent that the market needs to follow, and that's for a number of reasons. what's quite interesting is I saw that the option pricing market is actually anticipating a 5% increase or decrease on the back of the results. There's a lot of volatility built up on the back of these results. And the reason why I say it's important is Naspers has been struggling. Tencent has been struggling as a result of regulatory issues regarding its gaming in terms of getting approval for gaming. And you've seen all the headlines with regard to that, but you've seen nothing solid and nothing concrete out of the company. This will be effectively the first quarterly numbers you see in which you get to see the impact on what this regulatory delays is having on the gaming company.
But there's a lot of political pressure behind that regulatory headwind, shall we call it, Paolo. It's been under pressure for several quarters now. State media, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, criticizing it for contributing to things like gaming addictions. Even President Xi waded in, complaining that too many children are wearing glasses and blaming the time that they spend in front of these screens playing games. But in response, Tencent has launched an eye protection feature on its video app that blurs images when you look too closely at the screen. So the company is trying to innovate. It's trying to respond here. And in the gaming market, if you're a big fan of Tencent's big games, so PUBG, there's an NBA game, League of Legends, those are the big titles. From next year, you're actually going to have to let Tencent check your national ID against police records. So they are trying to respond here. I wonder if it'll be enough to appease the regulators.
I don't think so for now. So the reason I make that comment is what you've seen is a lot of analysts downgrading consensus numbers with regards to EPS and sales. So I think guys have got a lot ahead of themselves and haven't anticipated these changes to regulations. I think you have to let that filter through to the numbers. But all the things you mentioned in terms of being proactive, I think that's going to be a key thing for Tencent. Tencent is going to have to work very proactively with the regulator so that they continue approving games. But this is going to be a big, big quarterly number for Tencent. And if you look elsewhere, you look at the likes of Alibaba, Baidu, they're talking about pressure on ad spend and that. So I think that will also be quite a theme to watch in the Tencent results on Wednesday, given that it drives our market. 20%
absolutely. Well, there's one BAT, Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. There was another British-American tobacco that was absolutely smoked today. I don't know if you just got a quick thought on that, because the news is being driven largely by news out of the FDA that menthol cigarettes might be regulated. And they're a big chunk of earnings for BTI.
It's a huge... So the FDA making comments, or the Wall Street Journal actually making comments, that they're looking to ban and menthol cigarettes. That's a huge proportion of British American Tobacco sales, as well as Reynolds, which they recently purchased. And that adds to concerns. And on top of it, you have the whole vaping situation in terms of people moving to next generation products. What this will do to traditional tobacco products is also quite a concern. But what's interesting is this share used to trade to 900 Rand at one stage. Today it traded 560, which is a massive decline. The question I think you have to phrase, and you've got to think about it, is this is still a business that generates very strong margins, generates a substantial amount of free cash flow, and eventually, at the right price, it's worth purchasing. Because these issues such as FDA approval and banning menthol, this will take years to work out.
It will, and we tend to see an overreaction to stories that come along from time to time around FDA regulations. So perhaps for investors looking for a strong defensive play, if you can get over some of your ESG concerns with holding a stock like BTI, Black Friday might have come just a little bit early for you. Now, Tongaat Hewlett's results have been very difficult to digest, even with a spoonful of sugar. Some interesting IFRS adoption rules here. The adoption of IFRS 15, revenue from contracts with customers has resulted in a net increase in revenue of just over half a billion Rand. Yeah. So strip that out and these results are even worse.
Even worse. What's interesting is that these results came out on Friday afternoon, which I've yet to see a company put something out on the sense at Friday afternoon that is good news. It's always bad news. And these results were exactly that. It was bad news. You had a trading statement beginning of October, which gave you the indication of how bad it was going to be. But these results were pretty poor. Sugar operations and a massive amount of pressure. It's a very complex business in terms of how import duties work and how sugar is sold, exported and that. But at the end of the day, sugar operations took a big, big decline. And then something that people have always liked Tongaat Hewlett for is their land. Land has always been the thing that produces earnings while the rest of the sugar business is very cyclical. And Tongaat have always made the comment that land sales will be strong, they anticipate it to be strong, and they've had 300 hectares under negotiations. In this set of numbers they report tonight, they didn't sell a single hectare of land.
Can't close a deal, expropriation no. without compensation.
I think that is it. So, you know, you read a lot of comments in the Business Day that this will go slowly and it won't have an impact on land prices, but I think you just have to look at Tongaat Hulett's results to actually see the impact land expropriation is having on a business. Huge impact.
A real world example of some of that policy uncertainty that we bang on about all the time. People say, what is this? It's a buzzword. It's lost its meaning. Well, there you go. Richemont's results also came out on Friday, and I suppose investors have been concerned about that slowdown in China. How much do you see the Alibaba numbers actually feeding back into sentiment around Richemont?
Richemont's quite interesting. So the share price was under big pressure on Friday. Today it bounced 1%, but actually lost that into the close, so it continued to lose a little bit more today. If you look at the Richemont numbers, they were a little bit softer than what analysts were anticipating. But there are two major things that I think are causing some havoc here, is that their recent Net-a-Porter Yuke's actually reported a loss. Even if you strip out all the once-offs, it was actually loss-making. I think that was a big concern for the market, given that they took out the minorities of this business not so long ago. And then China, if you look at the Chinese retail spend in September, you're actually seeing that slow down. And I think it talks to also a broader impact. You know, you look at the youngsters of today, I'm a millennial, I'm included in that. But people don't want these Lani watches. People want a 4,000 Rand Apple watch that will tell them how many steps they've taken, how many SMSs they've received today. So I think that's also a big structural shift that you're seeing playing through. And watch sales, if you actually look at the numbers, were actually a little bit disappointing, gave up some in the margin there. So, but I make the point, you know, this is a business with hugely high margins, produces a lot of free cash flow, and is actually, if you look at it on evaluation metrics, it's actually looking reasonably attractive.
Yeah, it has for some while now. I suppose the question is when you start to see a bit of a bottoming out there. Vodacom results, speaking of sectors undergoing a bit of a structural shift, and we see these big mobile telephony businesses become utilities, and people say, well, where is the value? It's all over the top players. The value's always been in the data, and you've had a look at the data numbers here, and they don't look good out of Vodacom.
What's interesting, just to sidetrack a little bit, I still remember in my days of varsity, Electra once told me, you want to buy defensive, you buy hospital stocks, medical stocks, and telecommunication stocks. If you look at what's gone on in the JSE the last year, that's been an absolute disaster for telcos, absolute disaster for hospital stocks, and absolute disaster for pharmaceuticals. But if you look at the Vodacom results, share sold the business off 7%, MTN, Telkom also fell in sympathy of that. If you look at the results, one thing that I think worth highlighting is that on face value, you see headline earnings per share down 13%, and that looks very poor. However, the BE deal is in those numbers. Once you strip that out, your HEPS is up 6, which isn't particularly exciting. South Africa is, I think, what investors were concerned of today. You look at service revenue there, up 4.5%. Let's be honest, that's not beating inflation. And then the big thing is their data revenue growth, where you've seen big double-digit numbers in the past. So you look at it today, 7.5% increase in data revenue growth is... It's not great. And a lot of people were saying this is what was going to drive Vodacom a year, 2 years ago.
And no surprise that the market marking it down over 7% on the day on the back of those numbers. Sasfin's Paulo de Almeida with your view from the markets.